Next, we'll have Professor Jim Clark, who's Professor of Practice in the Department of Civil and Environmental Engineering. Professor Clark received his PhD in Theoretical Chemistry from Johns Hopkins University and his BA in Chemistry from Rockford College. Dr. Clark has over 30 years of experience in the investigation and remediation of contaminated sites, the environmental fate and transport of chemicals and radionuclides, environmental assessment, hazardous and radioactive waste management, environmental forensics, and the long-term management of legacy nuclear and hazardous waste sites. His research interests include risk analysis, long-term management of nuclear and hazardous waste sites, environmental containment transport, contaminant transport, sustainable environmental protection, and environmental forensics. He's got several articles relevant to today's discussion, including a sustainable environmental protection system for management of residual contaminants, containment of legacy waste during stewardship, and engineered containment and control systems nurturing nature.
Thanks. As John told you, the area I spent most of my career in is environmental restoration, hazardous waste sites, nuclear waste sites, things of that nature. Before joining the faculty at Vanderbilt full-time, I came here as a postdoc in a former life and then went into private practice for 25 years, and the company that I was with was instrumental in, I hate to say cleaning up, because we don't clean these sites up. We do the best we can with them, and then we try to keep the bad stuff from getting out, and we try to keep the people from getting in. So it's kind of where we are. In the early 90s, I started working on radioactive waste sites through the National Academy of Science. Went around to all the major Department of Energy sites. And just to give you some perspective, I think it was in 1994, the Secretary of Energy estimated that the legacy of nuclear weapons and the Manhattan Project and the Cold War was going to cost us on the order of $1 trillion. And that was to do the best we could with these sites and try to take them to an acceptable level of risk, whatever you would call an acceptable level of risk. The Secretary of Energy had a massive heart attack, is probably not strong enough, and that number got revised to $300 billion within about an hour. And that's about where it stands right now. The Environmental Management Division of the Department of Energy has a $6 billion budget. This year, they just got another $6 billion through the stimulus package. A lot of that money goes to Hanford, but it kind of gets spread around to all the sites. Now, just to give you a little more perspective, my perspective, and then I did bring some slides, because I think I cannot convey to you the challenge we have without showing you some pictures. So I hope I can do that and it won't take too long. It may turn into a movie, but... in any event, after 25 years of working in the private sector, coming up with and implementing approaches to restoring contaminated sites to the best we could and managing them long term, which is really the challenge, and that's where we get into sustainability. In the middle 90s or so, it struck me that all the things we were doing were simply not sustainable. What do I mean by that? Well, one of my favorite definitions of sustainability is that we make decisions that do not compromise people who come behind us. Well, what are we doing with all these contaminated sites? We're trying to lock up the contamination as best we can through covers over landfills and vaults and different technologies, but with the recognition, and we didn't have the recognition initially, but we certainly have it now, that what we were doing was hoping to violate the second law of thermodynamics at no additional cost. Nature doesn't like things all nice and tidy in one place and has a lot of natural processes to disperse them. So if we were going to keep this stuff where we put it, we would have to have long-term maintenance, and we would have to have long-term monitoring. Many of the radionuclides have half-lives of thousands to hundreds of thousands to millions of years. Many of the hazardous chemicals don't decay at all for heavy metals. So we're putting ourselves into a situation where we're really locking in future generations to maintain these sites and to monitor them. The Department of Energy very cavalierly will tell you that they expect this monitoring to go on in perpetuity. Well, I don't think Congress understands in perpetuity, so I'm not real assured by that. So my research for the past several years has been focused on how could we make these technologies more sustainable. I think that's the best we can do, is make them more sustainable. I mean, in terms of my definition, if you had unlimited resources, sustainability wouldn't be an issue. But we don't have unlimited resources. And we really don't want to compromise decisions through our decisions of people that come after us can make. So that's kind of, you know, my introduction. If I could squeeze by you and just show you a few pictures.
Am I in the thing?
We're
not in it, but you may want to see it, so you can see it.
When I first got into the private sector, I was with a consulting firm, and we're in the definition of an expert. An expert is out of town. And an expert has slides. And in those days, we did in fact have slides, those little two guys. Okay, so I frame my comments around sustainability. What does it mean? I've just kind of told you my concept of it. More importantly, for this workshop, I think, what does it mean within the context of my research? And now, how could I take that and incorporate it into my teaching? And that's what I've been trying to do for the past few years. This is the legacy of waste management process or practices where we simply dumped stuff into low-lying areas and then threw some soil over it and hoped it would stay there. This is the Idaho National Laboratory. Actually, they prettied it up by stacking the drums and they're trying not to injure anybody here. And then they found that the workers were getting much higher radiation doses stacking the drums, so they went back to just rolling it off the truck. This is a modern contamination isolation facility where we take an engineered approach. We do keep it in drums. We might solidify it, so hopefully it doesn't leach. We put covers over the top. We put liners under the bottom. And what we don't want to happen is that this stuff gets out, gets into the groundwater. That's the usual pathway, or if we're dealing with radon or gases, that it gets into the atmosphere. So we're using engineered barriers, and then we're using natural barriers that are in the environment. So simply we would put some engineered cover over it. And if we're doing a new facility, we have the opportunity to put a bottom that will hold and enable us to collect any water that gets into the waste while the site is open. And then hopefully we'll keep water from moving through the waste after the site is closed. And this is the typical resistive cover. I put resistive in quotes because I think what we're trying to do is we're really trying to fight Mother Nature. Is there a better way to do this? We put a cover over the top, soil cover, and then this is a plastic, if you will. It's a so-called a synthetic geomembrane that has very low permeability, and then we put a compacted clay over that. This is called a composite cover, and we hope water doesn't get through it. Because if water gets into the waste, then all these processes that can mobilize the hazardous and radioactive constituents kick in. And you can see how what they're doing is compacted the clay and now they're putting the plastic over the top. And that's a conventional approach, and the company I was with designed and implemented these at Superfund sites all across the country. I guess hoping they would last. When you put this in the context of the environment, here's our contamination isolation facility, and here's everything that nature is trying to do to disrupt what we spent millions of dollars doing. We have to deal with animal intrusion, biodegradation, plant intrusion, erosion, both water and wind, and there are just several processes that are fighting us. And so we have to maintain these facilities, we have to monitor them for a long time. The stuff that's in there may last thousands to hundreds of thousands of years, and water tends to be main pathway to get to the waste and get it out. So this is what's called a water balance model. So don't fight Mother Nature. A colleague of mine, Jody Wall, who works at the Office of Legacy Management in Grand Junction, Colorado, kind of opened my eyes and said, you know, we really need to design these systems to accommodate natural processes, not to resist them, and to accommodate natural change. We're trying to project out, well, the Yucca Mountain Project went on 1 million years. It's insane. Low-level waste, 10,000 years. Uranium mill tailings, 1,000 years. These are the so-called compliance times. Well, here's a way that doesn't fight Mother Nature. We put a soil sponge in, and we put plants on top of it, maybe even trees. And during the growing season, there's a process called evapotranspiration that will actually release any water that comes in back into the atmosphere through the plants and through normal evaporation. And then during the non-growing season, we've got this sponge to hold the water. And what we don't want to happen is the water makes it through and then gets into the waste. So this is called evapotranspiration and the water balance cover. A friend of mine in Wisconsin calls it a store and release cover. And I think those are all pretty good terms. But this is a way of trying to accommodate these natural processes and not put an engineered structure in here to try to resist them. I had a student who's going to defend her thesis on this Thursday. How do we evaluate these systems? How do we project them out to 1,000 years or 10,000 years? We do what's called a performance assessment, where we look at all the different processes that can take place and all the pathways that can take the chemicals down to places where they would be released, and then look at exposure scenarios and corresponding risk. This is called a performance assessment. We spend millions of dollars doing these performance assessments naively, convincing ourselves that we can project out to these very long time periods. Well, Niels Bohr said something that a lot of people probably want to attribute to Yogi Berra, because it really sounds like something Yogi would have said. Prediction is very difficult, especially if it's about the future. Well, that's the challenge. So how can we make it more sustainable, try to work with nature rather than resist it? Include performance confirmation along with compliance monitoring to build model confidence and improve the performance assessment process. So this is what my research is all about. We're trying to get to a point where we have more confidence in the models that we can go from there and maybe not have to monitor in perpetuity. Teaching opportunities. I have a course called Environmental Assessment that covers energy systems and remediation of contaminated sites. I'm interested in sustainable remediation, or let's say more sustainable remediation. And for the past several years, the Environmental Protection Agency has had an initiative called Green Remediation. They have a website. It's pretty interesting. I think we're kind of nibbling at the edges of green remediation. For example, this is the Maxie Flats low-level radioactive waste site that turned out to be a real problem and got a lot of attention and remediation. But they're using solar panels to drive the pumps for the groundwater monitoring. So some of these sites are looking at wind energy for some of the functions they have to do. Solar panels, again, just, you know, trying to work our way into more sustainable practices, at least at the back end of it. I guess what we really need are technologies that in themselves are sustainable. And that's all I have. So I hope I don't take too long to do that. Thank you.